You're listening to Red Center, your roundup of Red Camera news from the crew at fxguide.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's Red Center. I'm Mike Seymour.
Hi, Mike.
How are you, Jason?
I'm good.
And we're recording this on a very sunny Sydney spring day, so it's nice to be up, it's nice to be optimistic, and it's nice to be perky. And let me tell you what's coming up in the show this week. We'll be doing news, as we always do, covering the latest of what's happening both in the Red community and around the Red community. And then we're going to be turning our attention to a couple of interviews we have. Firstly, Jason, you managed to pick up with the guys from XL, didn't you?
Yeah, we mentioned them last ep. They had done the fantastic Red Menu workflow sort of crib sheets, and I thought, yeah, should catch up with these guys. They were had some great things to say. It's worth listening.
And then we'll be also covering, or rather, I guess, shifting our focus for the next few weeks onto R3D support outside of the normal Red apps by virtue of the companies that have adopted the SDK. Now, this is something that we were going to bring you last week, but we had the terrific roundtable discussion, and we'll come back to that in one second. So we'll be discussing, trying to discuss, the full gamut of companies that are adopting the R3D SDK. We're speaking to a couple of them this week, and we'll be discussing with each of the various companies more in the future. And as the actual products hit the sort of the production environment as opposed to the beta environment, we'll be reviewing them, sitting down and testing them and giving you our appraisal. So all that coming up later in the ep when we'll talk to Adobe, hear about Apple and Color. But right now, let's start with the news. And where are we up to, Jason, with our sort of Red users' ability to get their back-ordered cameras?
Well, looking really good. Just in the last couple of weeks, Red must have really whipped some people into shape. They're cranking out the cameras. They're pretty much going to have every camera that is on pre-order out the door by end of November.
Oh, really?
So that's, really caught up. So we're up to 3,400 to 4,300 and are now starting to get their emails and shipping out now. So, yeah, end of November, pretty much they're going to be caught up. And if you want to order one after that, you should get it, walk in with your checkbook and walk out with a camera.
I think there's a couple of interesting
things. If anyone has any money left in their checkbooks.
Yeah, actually, on that score, did you see the post that Jim did about the current economic crisis?
It was pretty interesting sort of comment. Basically, Jim was saying, look, you know, we love you guys. We love you buying our cameras, but, you know, think twice before you put your money down. This is a long-term approach, and, they want customers to be around next year.
I mean, it's absolutely the case that, as was commented by various people in the forum once that post had come out, that putting out, and I think these two points are related, putting out 4,300 cameras in the market is an astonishing dumping, if you like, or, you know, propagation to a community which, you know, in light of, say, the Genesis or something, which is like 50, 75 cameras or something, I don't know the exact number, but it's certainly, you know, in those sorts of digits versus the you know, almost 4,500 cameras.
I think it's fair to say, at least here in Sydney, at least here in Australia, that there's no lack of Red cameras. If you want one, you can get one. It's not sort of like, you know, it's not a museum piece anymore. You can definitely get one and to rent one if you want to use them.
Which, you know, is related to the economic thing, because if people were getting the cameras expecting to get a lot of rental out of them and they're maybe not getting the same rental out of them that they were hoping to get, then if you did borrow the money to buy that camera and to kit it up, there's some serious economic implications to that, especially if you've got lease repayments on the gear. Mm. And we use ours for FXPHD, and so we're quite happy to do that, and we make films with it and stuff, so we don't have any problem ourselves. But, you know, I'm sure there are some people that lashed out for the camera and aren't seeing the return on investment they were hoping for just because there are that many cameras out there.
And the other thing I'm seeing is that because the camera is sort of cheaper than, you know, a film camera or cheaper than a, you know, a Genesis, I think producers, and also I guess to their own fault, people who rent the gear are sort of pandering to it, really, are actually renting out packages way lower than they really should, considering the half the lenses they're renting are actually, you know, worth a red camera in themselves. You know, I'm seeing packages going out the door for, you know, really ridiculous amounts of money because it's almost expected, oh, it's a Red package, it should be you know, it should be a lot cheaper.
Right, so the lenses are getting discounted at the same sort of proportional ratio that what we're seeing.
Exactly, it's sort of considered to be a cheaper sort of alternative, given that it's, even though, you know, literally the lenses are exactly the same, you know, you're almost seeing a package renting out with a RED camera for the same price that you would actually rent a set of lenses if it was a film shoot.
As we were recording this, the stock market's in a downward spiral and it's broken through 9,000 in the US. Now, that stock price doesn't actually really affect anyone very much unless you're in the stock market themselves. But the ability to lend money, the ability to get credit does, and that affects small business owners, and that in particular affects small business RED owners. So my question is, do you think that this will affect Epic and people's decisions on Epic when it comes out next year?
Well, it's going to affect, I'm sure it would affect, essentially people outside of America as well. You know, the Australian dollar is, we were like 90 something cents, and now we're 86 cents or something like that. So
we're actually
even
68
less, 68,
cents.
Sorry. I knew it was worse than that. So essentially, you know, the price of a RED has got considerably more expensive for people outside of the US over the last week.
I mean, the Epic is a more expensive camera than the RED, so...
Yeah, so it just got more expensive on top of more expensive. So I think, look, if people are looking at how much... what this they've had, by the time the Epic comes, they would have had a chance to see how successful the renting of their RED ones has gone. You know, are they making money? Are they making their money back slowly? You know, going to have a good chance to see if it was a good investment in the first place before they up that investment.
Now, we still haven't seen the new specs on Scarlett, but I mean, that also plays into this because do we have the 4,500 Reds out there, but we have Scarlett coming, and Scarlett's going to be cheaper, more popular, so another whole batch of cameras. I wonder just what the expectations are on the sales of Epic. I mean, how many Epics does the market need, I guess, is a question.
Well, exactly. I mean, I certainly know that film is definitely, and I'm seeing it here, I'm not speaking as a fanboy thing. I know people who own gear and have got, you know, rooms full of film cameras that really are looking like, you know, they're heading for eBay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely sort of, it is definitely changing, and as obviously budgets tighten, it's people are heading more and as slowly as people are sort of getting the workflows happening, it's sort of becoming more and more a viable choice. And particularly as budgets go down, people are really going to want to put the dollars on the screen it represents actually making a profit. You know, it represents actually seeing some sort of a profit on a job if you can spend $3,000 or $4,000 on your camera package versus 10, you actually stand a chance for a change of actually putting something in your pocket at the end of it.
I guess the other thing is that, and it's, you know, a generalization, but theoretically, in any kind of downturn like this, one of the things that gets shaved fairly early is the advertising budgets of some of the big advertisers.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, with those advertisers no longer taking out the ads, that means both post houses' ability to invest in gear for processing that work, as well as, of course, directors just getting the work in the first place, all becomes, you know, quite a deal. So,
look, I mean, I think with the theoretically, because I'm talking Scarlett here now. Theoretically, maybe Scarlett or DSMC is going to end up with a full frame sensor. Has to. You're going to see people maybe more opting for one of those over a RED one.
I mean, I wonder, do you think, you've looked at the Canon, we'll get back to the news really soon, I promise, guys. You've looked at the footage shot on the Canon and the Nikon stills cameras with stills lenses on it.
Yeah.
Which has the huge advantage of having, you know, as I say, nice glass in front of it.
Yeah.
But if you didn't have a RED right now, would you consider shooting on something like that? Or is it not professional enough?
I think you'd have to go into it with the production, with the agencies sort of knowledge that, look, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to go, I mean, it's not going to suit everyone's style, but if you went in with the fact that, hey, we're going to have a crew of virtually nothing, and I'm just, with the sheer fact that I've got great depth of field, I can make this imagery look fantastic, available light, and it's more about the framing and how you use the lenses versus, you know, how many Xenons and 12Ks I've got in the truck. You're going to make it look, I think if you go into it with the fact, you know, with that in mind, and your agency walks into it with open eyes, that you're going to maybe have 3 days to shoot your commercial with a crew of three versus,
you know,
8 hours.
Yeah, I still get pushback. If you turned up with a digital stills camera, like a new 5D, and said, this is what we're shooting our commercial on, and the client walked on set, they'd
sure. Well, look, if they
anxious.
Were... I guess... yeah, look, I think if you... If, I think a lot of this stuff gets allayed. All of their fears do get allayed a lot by actually seeing footage. A lot of the time they go, wow, that's fantastic. And yet they only have to see somebody, a name, you know, someone, wow, here's a footage of a spot that was done, or here's, you know, don't this photographer's now doing commercials on it or whatever. It's just going to take one sort of, you know, agencies are pretty much kind of star fuckers. So they'll just, they really just want to, as soon as they know.
I heard what you said then.
They just want to know that, oh, if someone else is doing it, oh, well, fantastic, let's do it. You know, if you know, a name is out there doing it. Oh, look, I think yeah, they are, definitely are going to start to see spots shot in it, and it's actually going to be the race to see, you know, what's the first spot going to be done on this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about the camera shipping, but also Red Drives have come off backwater, haven't they?
Yes, which has been great news for someone who's probably had their Red sitting on a bench and have been only been able to shoot with CF cards for a while. So yes, Red Drives are no longer in back order, ready to purchase at red.com, $900 US, which is $2.4 million Australian. same with the Red Pro 7-inch LCD, which would be a cracker, I reckon. That's no longer in back order, so you can go and ready to purchase that, $2,500 US. I think that's a cracker. Much improved viewing angle. I think that's one of my little niggles with the smaller Red LCD is the viewing angle. I like to sort of hang around the camera a lot, and I'm always sort of stealing the LCD off the focus puller or people who probably need it more than me, and I'm operating, I'm sort of, you know, hanging around directing near the camera. So I like sort of watching the onboard, and I really sort of have noticed that the viewing angle on that LCD isn't quite so good. You really have to get it just right to be able to even be able to see performance, let alone, you know, exposures. So the viewing angle is much improved, and it's twice as bright, so it's another stop brighter. And it's a lot bigger, obviously.
Now, the other thing that went out this week was an email to Red users about the audio and iPin upgrade. So you should have received that if you're a Red user. And interestingly, in that email, Jason, they mentioned performing a chin-up that'll include the camera diagnostics and reseating stuff and adjusting and cleaning and also upgrading the CF card reader to handle the 16-gig cards, replacing screws and cleaning the low-pass optical filter and, you know, just generally giving it the once-over, which I think is pretty pretty interesting. And that program's in full flight. But a couple of people asked about this whole idea of the fact that in that email, they flagged the fact that they'd like you to send back other stuff, including, you know, your battery gear and stuff, to have it upgraded. In fact, the battery plates, the
excellent
lenses, the cables and stuff.
Awesome.
So so if you haven't received that email, please contact Red and get it. And
particularly the battery plates, because that's I've definitely had issues with that. We've had a few batteries melted and things, and I think it might have been the older battery plate. And obviously, everything's all been fixed up, but we had to sort of swap to another cable and in the middle of a shoot. But yeah, there was a lot of batteries being melted on set because the battery bracket was a slightly older design.
And we also should point out that your warranty period is coming to an end if you got one of the first cameras, because it's based off your warranty date of the original Red One, not off the date of the X version of your camera, for those of you in the first 100 or so. So if you haven't got your camera back and swapped, you should do it, you know, ASAP while you're still in the warranty period. So any other news, Jace, around the...
Yes. They've launched Red Europe.
Red Europe.
Yep. Located on the grounds of the esteemed Pinewood Studios in Buckinghamshire.
Now, this is different from the Red Ranch.
This is different from Red Ranch, which is going to be Vegas. This is actually in England,
uh-huh,
in Blighty. Over the next month or so, they'll commence partial operations, starting to do the audio upgrade programs there. So if you're in Europe or if you're in UK, you can go direct. You should be able to go direct to Red Europe and get it done there. So it's not, you won't be able to go and buy Red cameras there. They'll still all have to come out of Lake Forest, but if you, for tech stuff and iPins and things like that, you should be able to go to Red Europe. I grew up 10 minutes away from Pinewood. I think that's where I sort of got the film thing.
You strike me as a Pinewood kind of guy.
Well, we used to go to the Red, to the open days at Pinewood. Every year they'd have an open day, and we'd sort of, I have vivid memories of wandering through the 007 stage.
Maybe that's what got your interest in filmmaking.
Maybe. I've got lots of old Polaroid photos of me holding these massive big polystyrene rocks and standing in the, I guess what must have been the Superman set, the Fortress of Solitude, the whole ice set.
I'm doing a podcast with someone that's actually been in the Fortress of Solitude. Wow.
But it was Fortress, a lot of polystyrene. Of wow. A lot of a very empty polystyrene warehouse. But massive stage, especially when you're like 10. So, yeah, so that was that's really cool.
Well, being Jimmy to your Clark for a second, I'm going to just discuss one other aspect, which is for some of you who are obviously on the more technical side of things, you'll have noticed that there's been some issues with Build 16 and to do with real-time performance on some of the hardware platforms. So what's happened is that we sort of got wind of this a while ago, but it's been all confirmed in this last week that... The way that the R3D's files have been set up, we mentioned that there were some issues with playback in Final Cut, I think, in a previous podcast. There's also stuff now being acknowledged in Assimilate and Scratch to do with real-time playback. Now, there is a firmware update 3.2.1 that's probably not going to fix it. The Build 17... is a fair way along to addressing that. But if you're having real-time playback issues in Build 16, in Scratch, or in, for that matter, you know, R3D, you're not alone. It is something that's known about by Assimilate and Red, and they are working on it. And as we trying to get closer to solving this, we'll let you know what's going on. But they totally understand what's going on. It's not like it's a bug that no one believed. It's just that it's a bug that... that has slowed down real-time performance on those boxes, especially in 2K 24 frames a second, 4K 2x1 kind of material shot. And that's on, you know, Global Store and Box and Silverado systems. So it's the high end of those of you that are doing the work that would have those systems. So now let's turn our attention, if we can, to that interview that you did, Jace, and then... with the guys at Excel. And then after that, we're going to discuss workflow and the companies that are adopting the R3D SDK format and do a run-through of what's happening in Europe and in America. But you spoke to the guys during the week. Now, they seem like heck of nice guys.
Yeah, they are heck of nice guys. They're doing lots of interesting stuff. Where they're located is a real sort of a heart of sort of a lot of corporate headquarters. So they do an awful lot of that work. So really, they've taken their work from... sort of XL, from sort of XL1 kind of HVX 200 land and gone straight into Red, and that's really sort of taken off. The other thing they've done, and they covered in interviews, they've been doing a lot of Red days, which have been really successful, educating the market out there and getting some great responses. So they're real sharers.
So are you talking to Ken or Bruce or
all
Scott?
Three?
All three. Okay, brilliant.
Yeah.
All right.
So
well, let's cross to that interview now.
Okay, I'm talking to Ken Cossa, Bruce Ingram, and Scott Jones from XL Films. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jace. Hello.
Hello.
Who wants to give the XL Films story?
Well, that would be me. This is Ken. XL Films, we've been around since 2003 as a result of a merger between two companies. It's between myself and Scott Jones. And we're focused on the commercial market as well as corporate marketing. It's a huge industry here in Houston. There's a lot of headquartered companies here in town between oil and gas and healthcare. So that's really the biggest market here that we're going after in town.
So what got you into the Red side of things?
Oh, wow. That started at NAB a couple of years ago when Scott and I were out there. And, you know, we saw the hoopla and the lines around the booth. And we finally got a chance to get in there and actually take a look at the Peter Jackson film and actually look at a couple of the cameras that they had there. And once we saw the workflow had already been established using Final Cut, which we're an all Final Cut shop. It just made sense for us. We were already shooting on some of the other Sony 950 cameras and on a HVX 200 as well, but this was just something you couldn't pass up.
We got suckered in at NAB and put our money down on the spot.
Yeah.
So what gear have you got?
We just have the one camera. It's number 1720. We did deck it out with nice accessories. We've got the Arri MV20 matte box, Preston zoom control, Arri follow focus, O'Connor 2060 head. Got the 18 to 50 zoom, and we're waiting on the 50 to 150. They're telling us at this point it's still going to be a couple of months, so that's a little frustrating, but I think it's going to be worth the wait.
So have you done many projects with it?
Only a few. We've had it a couple of months. We've spent most of our time trying to educate the community here about the RED and get people here to understand what it is and how to work with it. So that's been a big focus. This is typically our slow time during the summer. We're just now coming out of it. So we've done a few projects, but we've got about a half a dozen queued up, ready to go in the next month.
Well, talking of educating people, you guys have been running a lot of RED days. Take us through that.
Yeah, we've done two of those now. We did the first one here at our shop, which is about 30 miles west of Houston, and had about 35 people, and that went well. And then we did another one 2 weeks ago at the Art Institute of Houston, which is centrally located in town. And that one drew about 70 people, even though we had just come off Hurricane Ike. It was the first day that the Art Institute had power, and we still had 70 people show up. So there's a lot of enthusiasm here, a lot of curiosity. And we figure that the quicker we can kind of help people understand what the camera's all about, the quicker we'll get working with it. So,
right. So take us through what you do on the days.
We start off with a camera session, which I lead. It takes about 2 to 2.5 hours. I kind of just introduce the company, kind of walk through the history of the company, introduce the camera, and then we do a real thorough run through of all the buttons on the camera, what all the functions are. And then go through all the menus. We go through the menus item by item, and that really helps give the attendees a real thorough understanding of how this camera is different, how it works, and how it's different, because it really is a combination of film, video, and digital stills. And then we take a break, and Bruce Ingram, our uber geek here, runs the post-production side of it. So he does the DIT presentation and takes them all through all the post workflows.
Basically, I take them through just the idea of what a DIT would need on set as far as hardware and software and such. You know, Red Cine and R3D management software. And then I run them through Keynote, talking about different workflows in Final Cut primarily, but also touching quickly on Avid and Premiere.
Can we touch on that a bit? Can you give us the Reader's Digest version of that?
Sure. For our DIT set, we have Apple MacBook Pro. We use the what is currently the highest end available that has the 17-inch HD monitor. We use a SATA 3 PC card to two SATA hard drives. And so when we ingest the files, we do it simultaneously, which works really well. We've done that with all the digital process from P2 footage to the RED footage now. And we also have on the laptop RED Cine, so if we want to do any quick color looks or anything like that, as well as Final Cut if we want to do any quick edits. Then, of course, when we bring that back to the shop, we dump all those hard drives off to a SAN system. For, you know, the offline, online editing. And our basic workflow is right now we pretty much finish in Apple ProRes. Once Apple gets a true R3D support, either inside Color or inside Final Cut, we'll switch to that. But right now we're primarily Apple ProRes. And so what we do is I take the footage into Red Rushes and actually edit out a small DVC Pro files for the offline edit. We offline edit with those. Then once the edit's locked, or good enough locked, to actually go ahead and start taking it to After Effects or so on, I use a Crimson workflow, take those clips into Red Cine. I generally don't do a first light in Red Cine. Actually, I wait to do the first light with the Apple ProRes files inside Color.
Right.
So I take those to Red Cine, render them out, take them back into Final Cut, send it to Color, and then basically start doing my coloring. And then either, you know, take that color back or take that color back into Final Cut, of course, and then anything that needs to go to After Effects for graphics and such like that, finish off from there.
How do you find color? I mean, I found it a pretty steep learning curve, one of those things that you either push past that and get good at it, or you just walk away.
I was the same way. We used to do all our coloring in After Effects. And the render time in After Effects, especially once we started working pretty much everything in HD, was just nightmarish just because of our, you know, the deadlines and the clients. So I finally just sat down and went, okay, we need to get color work in. And literally within an hour, I was able to do 98% of the stuff you can do in color. Just because of having that experience in After Effects. It's basically the same stuff, the same tools. They're just kind of in different places. And really, once you kind of get the room workflow kind of thinking in color down, it's pretty straightforward after that. If you've ever worked in any color software, you pick it up really quickly once you kind of get past that, just where the stuff is.
Yeah.
And I love it. I mean, it handles Apple ProRes great. It handles DPX great. 2K runs like a dream on it. We have a A-core Mac Intel with 8 gigs of memory and the ATI 1900 XT video card in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't slow down. I have to do a lot to it in color before I even start to notice sluggishness.
Wow.
It's great. I love it.
It's such a fluid situation right now. We're just kind of holding off on jumping too far in one direction. We were looking at Scratch, and we're still looking at Scratch, but we've been pretty happy with the results from color, so we're hoping that we can get R3D support in it pretty soon, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Scott, what were you shooting on before you got the Red?
A variety of things. I mean, we used to shoot a lot of film. 2 or 3 years ago, that sort of started going away because of budgets, and we started working in HD. Shooting mostly with the F900 and the Varicam. And then we bought the Panasonic HVX200 a couple of years ago and started doing some of the smaller projects on that. So it's been a variety of things, but we're pretty much pushing everything to Red now.
I saw on the site the Robin Guitars spot. That was really nice.
Well, thanks, we appreciate it. That was the first thing we did with the camera. And
yeah, that was a real challenge, Jason. We went out there just with very minimal crew, just with the three of us and another couple extra hands and minimal amount of the gear, and just shot all that in one day with the owner there. And he was gracious enough to allow us come in and just have complete access to the guitar shop and worked on that piece. We actually put that together for our first Red Day, so we would have something to show that was shot on the camera.
Just looks very different from a lot of the sort of the medical and a lot of the corporate stuff. It sort of feels like it makes you shoot it differently just because it's so much more lovely out of the box, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. After we finished the day, I felt like I had, you know, only started scratching the surface on the opportunities there. So I actually took the camera back another day and just kind of hung out and just grabbed a bunch of shots and had a blast doing it. It really has, for me personally, it's really revitalized my enthusiasm for cinematography. Just, you know, having the shallow depth of field and just such a nice looking image, it's making it a lot of fun. It's really enjoyable owning it too, because, you know, you can just take it out and shoot whenever you want. We went out before the hurricane came and shot a bunch of time lapse of the clouds coming in, got some fun stuff with that. So it was not so much fun going from shooting film to HD. I mean, HD's fine. It's nice, and I think we've all kind of gotten so used to it, we don't think much about it. But to suddenly have this new tool that's very cost effective in front of us that approaches 35 is a blast. You know, it's fun for me to go out and shoot it. It's fun for Ken to sell it to clients because they like the cost and the quality. And it's fun for Bruce to go in and color on it because he can just push it, you know, a long way, and it holds together well.
Yeah, when we have clients coming by the office, you know, for visits or sessions or what have you, we'll show them the new camera and when we got it, and they would be asking us a lot of questions, and they were almost intrigued about it as much as anybody is, even though they're not necessarily in this business. These are corporate and agency clients, and they were the first thing they would ask, you know, hey, are you going to shoot our next project on this thing? And we say, well, absolutely. So there's definitely a buzz about the camera, and it's been fun for us just getting out there and educating crew as well as clients about this new tool and to get everybody excited about it.
Well, on that whole educating front, thanks for the little Red One menu guides. They are a cracker.
Yeah, when we first got the camera, we found ourselves fumbling around in the menus trying to find things, and it just didn't make any sense. So started sketching it out, you know, just on paper, with the idea of transplanting that onto the computer and doing something simple. And then once I got into it, you know, of course, it's like most things, it got more and more complicated, and decided to just kind of try to go all out and make it look nice.
And once it was finished, you know, it looked like it was a really good tool for us to use just to educate ourselves. And he said, well, I'm just going to go ahead and post this on RedUser. And we're like, okay, great. Maybe someone else can use it. And then you start seeing all the other folks kind of hitting that thing and starting to download it. And then we, you know, we heard your comment on finding it in the camera case. We just thought that was just great, that we're glad so many other people were able to take advantage of
it. Yeah. Okay, so what's next, guys?
Well, we're anxious to get started on some of these projects now that our fall is getting busy. We've got a documentary we're talking to a gentleman out of California about producing for the Texas prison system here. And we've got several healthcare clients, hospitals here in the Houston area and the Texas Medical Center, that we've got some projects that we're getting ready to jump on with those guys. And lots of things in the hopper, and we're excited about getting the red on all of them.
That's great, guys. Thank you. Fantastic to chat. Where can people find you?
You can find us at xlfilms.tv. And we've got a special section on our website there dedicated to the Red called Red Square. And we're constantly trying to keep that updated with new Red tidbits. So check it out.
Fantastic. Anybody Twittering?
Non-Twitterer here.
No, usually don't have time for Twitter.
It's all consuming.
Good to see. Head down, bum up. Don't start.
Yeah,
thanks
pretty much.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks to all you guys at FX PhD and FX Guide. You guys are a great resource for the community and just doing a really good job.
Great. Oh, thanks for that.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Jace. That was good.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you, guys, for sharing. I appreciate you talking.
Now we're going to start talking about companies that are supporting the R3D SDK format and companies that are outside the small select group that has been doing it. We were going to bring you this last week, but we had that terrific roundtable. I thought it was a terrific roundtable.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Stu and John.
Got a lot of response. A lot of people were very, very interested in it. We should do it more often.
I think we will. I think every once in a while we'll do a roundtable discussion when there's something relevant to be discussed, especially I think if there's some major cameras or something that needs breaking down and understanding.
Yeah,
it's a good format to do it, and we really appreciate those guys taking the time and you for actually sending us emails and thanking us and pointing out things. And
yeah, we haven't mentioned it for a while, but yeah, awesome. We love the feedback. It's great, and a lot of stuff and also some I'll touch on it later on as well when we get to gear. A lot of the things I've done and interviews that we're about to put into action are because people have given us feedback. So yeah, please do. Even if you think it's not important or you think we're not sure, just throw it our way anyway.
So this week, as I said, we're starting our series really on looking at the SDK R3D support. And I want to give you a quick overview of the companies involved, and then we're going to sort of drill down on hopefully a different one each week. So Jace, in sort of a non-definitive survey of those people, because this is certainly not from a list published by anyone, just from my scanning. Clipster from DVS is released that they're going to be doing stuff, and they have a really strong 4K tradition going in, and we're going to be actually looking at the Clipster box, and I've spoken to the guys about that and at DVS, and DVS has offices in, basically quite a few, and I think it's LA and Miami and sort of places like that, but they're based out of Hanover, and I know they have other offices around the world in, you know, Singapore and Paris and stuff. We're going to sit down and have a look at their ability to conform R3D files and stuff in future weeks. There's also Cineform, which has a command line utility thing. There's Nucoda, which we'll be sitting down with. Assimilate, we've already spoken to and a fair bit about. It's probably going to do a special on Assimilate, other than I did want to point out this week, I've been harping on about Assimilate not supporting audio in the R3D files, and which made their workflow for doing dailies, I thought, somewhat limited. And that has been changed with the new release this week of 4.1. So while we're not going to do a whole thing on Assimilate in this series, because we've already done a fair bit on them, we should just flag that's big news that they're now supporting clip-based audio from the R3D files in Assimilate. Adobe, which we're going to come back to, and as well, let's do Adobe now. We've been talking about Adobe's adoption of R3D, and then Adobe announced that they'd also sort of signed this sort of weird deal with Assimilate, that they were going to be working together and producing stuff, though there wasn't much to talk about at that point. So we asked John when he was in Europe to actually hook up with Adobe, and he found and sat down with Simon Hayhurst. Now, Simon is the product manager for Adobe's Dynamic Media Organization, and he's really one of the guys, the linchpin of the Adobe effort to adopt the R3D files. And John sat down and asked him basically about what the strategy was for Adobe and their R3D implementation.
Yeah, we love German crew. It's an exciting time. If you think back to NAB when we announced our Cinema DNG initiative, that was an acknowledgement of the fact that raw workflows are coming, finally, to video. Right? So we've had them in still canvas for a while. We all know why we want raw workflows, so just the fact that they're coming is exciting enough. One of the things I love, though, is our architecture is so open, and that allows us to be pretty unique about the way we can approach the workflow. And so what we're talking about a lot here at IBC, and we talked about on the Red User Forums a bit before, was how's that workflow look in an ideal world where it's raw in, do what you need to do in the editor and flow out to Assimilate or whoever else you want to work with. And I think we've got some really unique potential. So I'll talk first about little baby step one. Little baby step one is already pretty good, which is we don't use wrapped files at all. So the traditional process today is you use a QuickTime reference file, and that bakes in a certain level of functionality. Step one for us is we're working literally with the R3D files, and it comes in, and we're decoding on the fly. And the very first thing we've exposed in the demos that we've shown is just changing the one simple parameter, which is the scaling. And so what this means from a pragmatic workflow is I bring in all my R3D footage, I lay it out on the timeline, and I go, you know, I'm on my laptop. So I'm going to work at 8th res because I'm just sitting there working in the little window within the screen anyway. It's all real time. And you go, you know what, I need to do a color correct. I'm going to flip over to After Effects, dynamic link across. No, nothing was rendered out. I'm still working with that same raw file that's in memory. And I'm just going to flip the res up to 4K. Do the color correct, do a couple other bits and pieces, flip back over to Premiere Pro, it picks up the changes through Dynamic Link, I turn the res back down to 1/8 res, I keep editing. And right now, the only other way you could do that workflow would be doing your editing, get to roughly where you want it to be, unlink all of the QuickTime reference files, link in the high-res ones, do the changes you need to do, unlink all the high-res ones, relink in all the low-res ones. So we're taking tedious steps out of the process. You can imagine that from here, the next step is, since we're doing everything on the fly and we've got this very native architecture that's resolution independent, you could start to say, well, you know what? Since I'm just decoding on the fly, I could start to play with the color and keep that all as metadata and have that metadata flow all the way through to Assimilate. And so they're on our stand each day talking about this. We've got Ted Shilovitz up for a while, and then I can't remember who's coming from Assimilate. It might be Jeff coming up talking about, but that's the sort of vision of the process, is you should be able to work with pure native files. No pixels are harmed during this editing process, and the metadata just flows downstream into your finishing tool. And we've got the first step. It's pretty exciting. I think we're jazzed. I feel like architecturally we've got the right kind of approach and great partners to work with, both Red and Assimilate. They're all great guys to work with. So it's a lot of fun. Try it out.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what you can commit to, but I mean, so it intentionally, the idea would be, would you be able to support all the things that you say in Red Alert in your applications? So if you wanted to actually do final output in your applications, that would be possible?
Yes, that's absolutely the intent. We want to make a smooth as butter workflow that exposes the potential. See, I mean, at the end of the day, and this is where I think the philosophical alignment is really good, Red's made this phenomenal camera, but the workflow right now doesn't live up to the potential of the camera, in my opinion. And so we've talked about it a lot, and we all agreed on what the workflow should look and feel like, and we're working out how quickly we can get there.
I'm curious, are you doing this work, or is Red doing this work? Or
yeah. We're all in this together. There's bits of it where I think they've got more expertise right now. They've been playing with their stuff for longer. On the other hand, we're a pretty good software company, and they may be a little bit more of a camera and a hardware company. So there's certain places where I think we've got something that we bring to the table. And so, you know, we sit down, and sometimes it's Red and us, sometimes it's Red and Assimilate and us, and we're all sitting down together and focusing on the things we do best. Like Assimilate, they do color really well, you know, and Red do cameras really well, and we do software really well, and workflows really well. And so, yeah, we are all, I think, successful partnerships are about everyone brings the best to the table. So.
Is
we're
this
trying
stuff?
Not to be too religious about this is my bit and that's your bit. And, you know, you do your bit and then I'll do my bit. And I was like, that's no way to work.
Technologically, you're using the GPU or CPU, a combination of both, or
Right now, what am I allowed to talk about? Right now, I you can test this yourself, so no reason not to be shy about it. Right now, I think you'll find that it's a very CPU-intensive process, but debayering is something that looks amenable to GPU acceleration, and that's one of the things that we're good at. And so when I talk about expertise, one of the examples is we're pretty good at that GPU optimization thing. And we've got friends who spend a lot of time with us, like NVIDIA spends a lot of time with us on GPU optimization. So that could be one of the paths forward, is we're evaluating what it would look like. And there's certainly some architectural advantages. If we can get enough of the process down on the GPU and staying there, that could be attractive. That would be exciting. Yeah, let's do that. So, yeah, the future's gray and cloudy and fuzzy. But where we are today is you can flip resolutions and more goodness to come. We've barely got started.
So I think the thing here is that the one question we don't have yet is exactly when we're going to be able to get our hands on the R3D files.
Good question.
It isn't in CS4. I couldn't get anyone to commit to it being intrinsically in CS4, though it's going to be supported in CS4. So as soon as we have those dates, we'll give them to you. The other thing that at the same conference was interesting is that Apple showed a new prototype, I guess, of Final Cut. Now, it's quite unusual for Apple to be showing stuff ahead of time.
Amazing.
But they showed the fact that Final Cut will be supporting R3D natively. In particular, this makes an impact in the support of the R3D files in color. Because color at the moment supports a DPX format, and it's effectively a, workflow wall. You have to kind of throw your files over the wall from Final Cut into color. And in the process of doing that, we leave Red World, which is where our R3D files are natively handled via the QuickTime plugin in Final Cut, and have to suddenly start dealing with our R3Ds as exported DPX files in color. I think this renders the process really annoyingly not very helpful, because we obviously love the fact that we can still manipulate our files in Final Cut, and when we go to manipulating them in color, we want them to be, as they are in Final Cut, accessing the R3D files. So they showed this actually working at IBC, Jase.
Fantastic.
And what was really interesting about it is that they have a tag, and we sent Doug Suter, who's a good mate of ours, over to have a look at this. And Doug is a Final Cut user, so he's a good person. And they showed this at the first, I think, Final Cut users group Super Meet. Now, we have those Super Meets in Vegas, and we're kind of used to them at NAB. They're terrific, enormous events. I mean, just probably one of the biggest single event outside the conference itself at in Vegas. So they did the first one of these at in Europe. And at that first group, they showed this. And so in a sec, we'll cross to Doug. But I think you'd agree that up until now, I'm not really aware of anyone. I mean, people do it, obviously, but I'm not really any of my colleagues that are actually color grading in color with R3Ds.
No, I just did a job last week, which was a real quick sort of job. And we decided, look, because the rushes were so close to how I wanted them to look anyway, it was just a matter of evening them up. So rather than go off and spend, you know, a couple of grand an hour grading, we just said, look, let's have a bit of a play in color, see if it works. And it was great. And it was actually the first time I'd actually seen anyone actually get anything worthwhile out of it. I think it is one of those things you got to push past that initial pain barrier with the thing, which I've never bothered. I opened it up, quick play, yeah, okay, thanks very much, close it up. Doesn't feel very Apple, doesn't feel very very anything, really.
Well, the new version will hopefully address that. So let's hear from Doug. And I asked Doug to head off and investigate this for us.
Hi, Mike. This is Doug Suter from SydneyFCP.info, and this is just a quick check-in as a response to the email you sent me, because you're interested in this new feature in color where R3D files are have their own little tab, and they do, and it's cool. So a little bit of background. At the moment, I'm in London, and I've a couple of weeks ago jetted off to Amsterdam as part of IBC, but more specifically the Final Cut Pro Super Meet that was there, the first European Super Meet that they recently had. And we saw a lot of cool stuff. So one of them was this new addition to color, which is expected out in the next release. So it'll make a lot of sense to you if you already use Aperture or you use RAW photographic files. And actually, that's the advice that I'm giving out to anybody who's, you know, looking at RED and interested in RED. I'm saying take still photos first and then take them into something like Aperture. Get to know how RAW photo files behave and are treated in post, because it's essentially the same process. And as you can expect, in color, the R3D tab that's right there in the primary grade room is exactly the same. It's just tweaks that you can do before your primary, because of course the files that are brought in from the R3D cards have got to be processed. There's information that was recorded on the day, but then they get processed again when they come into your Mac or PC environment. And that's cool, because what that means is as technology gets better, and as there's better ways to decode that information, movies that looked a certain way a few years back in the future are going to look that much cooler again. So everybody knows it's worth holding onto those original R3D files. Anyway, I'm digressing. So this tab, what it looks like, it's basically a set of options that you're given before you do the actual import. So white balance, exposure, all those things that you'd expect to be able to change when importing a still RAW file, you can tweak right there in the primary room in color before you bring it in. So what will happen then is Final Cut will be able to read those as well. It's going to be wrapped in a QuickTime wrapper, so there's going to be no transcoding. What that means then is that your RED workflow is no longer a destructive process, which is really cool. It also means that if you've got detail hiding away there, say in the highlight areas or the black areas, even if you can't see it, that information is preserved. So if you've, once again, have a look at Aperture, you might see an option there. It's called a recovery slider, and what that does is it rescues things that have previously been blown out into no detail in the whites, for example. Now, if you try and do this with a non-RAW file, it's not going to do anything. It's going to bring down the level of those whites, but the detail that was there is lost forever. But with a RAW file, the detail is still preserved in there, even though it might be invisible beforehand. And it's exactly the same case with the RED. So that's really exciting to be able to bring all those levels of detail back using this new tab, which allows us to access that special unseen data. And really what I've noticed is that's where your pictures start to ping. It's in those little areas that other cameras or other codecs just can't access. And so you might not know it on a conscious level, but when you look at that picture, and you don't need to know anything about digital photography really to be able to appreciate it. So it's going to look schmick to your audience as well. I've got to wrap this up. I'm quickly just throwing something here for Mike and all of those out at FX Guide and FX PhD land. So I hope you found that useful, something to Google. In the meantime, feel free to come and join us at www.sydneyfcp.info, where we've got a little community of Final Cut Pro users online, questions answered, video tutorials made for free upon request, and also the Final Cut Pro Talent Registry if you need Final Cut Pro operators, or if you are a Final Cut Pro operator, be sure to check that out at www.fcptalent.com. So that's all for now. Thanks very much for the opportunity of putting my word in, Mike, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon. Cheers.
We really appreciate that from Doug, and as Doug said, his way of approaching the problem is to really think of it as being a color dealing with it like Aperture does. And you know what? I'm sure Apple's going to sell it that way. I completely makes sense to me.
Can I go back to the Final Cut Pro thing in R3Ds for a sec? Because my sort of how I thought of it, and maybe others out there as well, is that I really thought that essentially, even though Final Cut is cutting the proxies, that it was actually accessing and physically working in some way with the R3Ds, because the proxies are like essentially almost nothing. They're like, you know, a few K. All of the data must be still within the R3D, isn't it? Because if you change the R3D in Red Cine or Red Alert, the grade sort of seems to change in
Final Cut. So what's happening is that there's data stored in the QuickTime proxy that Final Cut's accessing that's letting you play back that. So it's a QuickTime access into the R3D file, and that's what Final Cut's dealing with. if you go into Red Alert, you're not actually changing the R3D file. You're changing and regenerating the QuickTime proxies. So you're sort of resetting the little numbers that are stored as its guide how to access and interpret the R3D files. So,
but it is still accessing the R3D files, though, in all.
It accesses the R3D files. The question is, how much control do I have because I'm dealing through the QuickTime proxies level of abstraction? So let me give you an example for a second.
That's for sure. Level of abstraction.
The in Red Alert, when I'm starting to play with things like the ISO and the exposure, that's deliberately changing the way the R3D files are being decoded, and then I look at it on the screen, and then, oh, by the way, I can make a new QuickTime proxy of it. But that's why Red Alert doesn't play in real time. Now, what Final Cut's doing is saying, given a set of numbers, I'm going to be fed through this QuickTime proxy my files. But it doesn't actually give me the full decode, full quality. It just gives me the QuickTime version of getting into it. Now, you might think that's a moot point. You might say, well, what's the difference? And the difference is the degree of control I get over being able to adjust the raw information. In other words, I can't, for example, say I'd like to look at this without matrixing on. I can't play with the DRX. I can't do a bunch of things that I can do with the raw files when I'm going through the QuickTime engine, because QuickTime has no concept of a DRX. It has no concept of being able to adjust some of that metadata information.
Right. And so it will be a major change then, really, once people are able to...
Well, now, it's interesting you say that, because there's a debate raging whether or not the new version of Final Cut will in fact just mean that log and transfer will enable you to bring in R3D files and put them in as QuickTime with no transcode and just preserve the metadata, or whether it'll actually allow the R3D file to access some of those things that I've been talking about. Clearly, raw files in color are particularly important, because you have the primary room, as you heard, and the red tab, and this is where you can edit the raw parameters such as the white balance and exposure and stuff as a pre-grade step. It's almost like having Red Alert inside color, and then once you hand it over, it produces this QuickTime with no transcode sort of R3D 4K version. Yeah. The other thing that's significant is, of course, Final Cut doesn't allow us to get anything above 2K resolution, and I've yet to see confirmation that color will be limited to 2K. I think color may be able to read the full R3Ds and do 4K grading, which would be really interesting. I don't know if that's true, but it'll be worth checking out. But that is for some people, a pretty serious limit, the 2K limit.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if suddenly color becomes a much essentially rebirthed. It's going to be, I think that's going to be quite a big thing.
Well, I anticipate that it would get a workover, because the first implementation was really taking the code that they bought and putting it in bundled for free, which was great. And that was, 2 years ago? Or at least a year and a half ago?
And then there it sat ever since, pretty much.
But you'd expect them to do the Apple workover and change the menus to look like Apple menus and work like Apple menus. Not they ever did that with Shake, but let's hope they don't go the same way they did with Shake and just drop the product. So let's continue on now with our SDK R3D stuff. Avid is the big one, and we'll be doing Avid in coming weeks. But one of the most significant aspects of Avid is well documented, actually, in a PDF that they've put up online on their site. And this is the use now of Avid Media Composer or Avid Symphony with an XML version having an EDL sort of capability that can be read by Red Cine, or for that matter, Monkey Extract. So what this means is that before we just had sort of an EDL output, we needed to use things like Crimson to complete the loop and work out how things are done. But Avid was showing at IBC and has now published this PDF on their website showing how you can work with Red Rushes going into Media Composer using the XML EDL export to cause something like Monkey Extract to then... which, you know, is actually just using Redline. It's like a, overlay of Redline.
Yeah.
But it is, let's face it, much simpler to use than Redline.
Sure.
To then pull your relevant stuff and, then you've got a bunch of DPXs. In their case, they want you to put those DPXs into AvidDS, but you could put them into anything.
Okay, so something has actually changed in the way
absolutely. Something works. It's definitely much easier because of the XML representation holding the metadata, which means that we're no longer losing both time codes. We now have simultaneous both time of day time code and edge time code, and that's a big difference in Avid workflow, and we'll be discussing that in coming weeks.
What are people actually changing to be able to do this? Are they upgrading us? Is this software updates? Is this a new version of Avid?
You have to have an Avid XML workflow. So if you've got an old Avid, this isn't going to work.
Okay.
But as I said, you know, like we'll go into it in more depth.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Just to spin out our overview, Autodesk has signed the RED SDK licensing agreement. They said that on the 15th of September. I spoke to them during the week and asked them if they would go on the record as to what they're doing and whether it's going to appear in Flame and Smoke and stuff. They said they couldn't do that for obvious legal reasons. They really wanted to, good guys. However, one of the guys who's handling the RED implementation did point out that he actually sits in the Inferno Flame Smoke group, and that's where he sat. And I think that's interesting, really, where he sits. Then, of course, Quantel. Now, Quantel has also announced R3Ds coming on the EQ, IQ, and the Pablo.
Yep.
We spoke to Quantel during the week, and we're going to follow up with them for an interview. It was published that they were going to be providing this in version 4 software. That's actually sort of a misquote. What they were trying to say was they're going to be providing RED support free of charge to any version 4 owners, but it'll be in version 5 software. So if you are an EQ, IQ, or Pablo user, that's not something that should be working in version 4. But the good news is that they're going to confirm this, but their expectation is that version 5 will be released within the fortnight, certainly inside of October. And when we're recording this, it's about, what, the 9th or 10th of October today. So, you know, they want to get it out before the end of October. That gives them effectively a couple of weeks to get that done.
Oh, okay.
But we'll be speaking to them. Yeah.
All right.
So the big A's are Adobe, Apple, Autodesk.
Yep.
The small A's are Assimilating. but yes, and then...
So we're going to see R3D, some sort of R3D accessibility for like Flame, Fire, Smoke.
They're not officially saying that. We're just saying that the guy that's doing the implementation just happens to have his seat in the team.
Yeah.
That may mean nothing.
Yeah.
That may mean nothing at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's all good news. I can tell you this, that talking to guys at a conversational level, there is nothing but respect and desire to move forward. You know, it's not like there's any barriers, psychological, there's no snobbery, there's no we don't want to do this kind of thing. There's none of that. It's just, you know, any big company like Apple or Adobe, I mean, getting Adobe on the record was terrific. I think John did an amazing job getting that, as we heard earlier. But yeah, you know, getting them to go on the record is a big deal because of, what's the US share market law? I'm going to say Sorensen, but that's a compression.
Yeah,
from
that. Yeah, I know what I'm trying to say. Sarbanes-Oxley, or whatever it is.
Thank you very much. Yes, and so for that reason, that's thing. And the last one in the equation I'm really looking forward to is DaVinci. Now, I don't have an official confirmation yet that DaVinci signed the SDK, though I know they're very interested in being able to do the decode, and the decode is something that they think that they can really add value to. So hopefully we'll get a confirmation from them. And I may be going up to visit their local office in Asia later in the before the end of the year.
Excellent.
And we can get them on the record on that one. So what we're going to do is, as we say, now start each week and grab the versions of software as they come out and actually sit with them and try and review them for you. We're nervous about doing that at the demo stage on stuff that isn't released because we really don't want to be selling what they're meant to doing. We want to see what they actually do. But if there's somebody off that list that we have missed and that you would like to hear from, please let us know and we'll complete the list. We would like to be able to provide a comprehensive survey of how these workflows are going and also just the quality level because we want to be able to independently judge it. We know a lot about R3D files. We know what they look like. We've dealt with them a lot. We want to be able to see how they're being dealt with and making sure that, you know, all the subtleties of the controls that we've come to expect are now available because that whole job of transferring your R3D files to, say, DPXs or whatever is absolutely vital for getting good quality. And I can't emphasize this enough. People say, well, we were doing everything good and there was nothing else in the grade. And I said, well, how did you get the files? Well, they were transferred. Yeah. Who did the transfer? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know you got everything? Well, they just did everything that was there. And that's not true. You need to know what you're doing in the transfer stage. And so as each of these companies start implementing these workflows, we want to make sure that we can really put them through their paces to make sure the image quality and the control and latitude is there. But still, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's got that geeky sort of
backdrop to it, but it's the difference between using the Red next time or being able to, or someone, if you being able, wanting to rent your camera the next time, or wanting to go to your post house and use your workflow. If the closer you get it right, more chance you're going to get another gig.
Now, you may be thinking that's all just post-centric, and to a certain extent it is, but I just want to flag also that at the other end of the spectrum, just in terms of using the camera, a good friend of ours, John, who was actually on the podcast for the Roundtable, said to me, I think he might have even said it during the podcast, said, I really wish someone would go out and produce the definitive set of, rules of thumb and whatever to shooting well on the Red camera. Why isn't there somewhere I can go that's just going to give me the guidelines of how to get good stuff out of the camera with the current build? And that's of course a challenge thrown down the gauntlet, and I was more than happy to see if we couldn't address that. So over at FX PhD, we're starting a course with Pete Holler. Now Pete shot two features on the Red already, so that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and we've spoken to him on the show.
He's going to be joining us to run through both the practical and the theory. So our example is green screen. It's something that I've discussed before. You want to shoot 5600, you want to shoot green, you want to shoot the green up at a certain IR level. We're going to sort of do that and say, well, this is what you should do. You should shoot it on daylight, you should shoot it at this level. This is what it should look like on the scope, this is what it should look like on the camera. But then we're also going to do a bit of theory behind it so you understand why that is. So you'll have the cheat sheet of what you should do, which you could just hold on to that and forget the rest. But it'd be nice to also know why that is the case. And we're going to do our darndest with build 17 and possibly build 18 to bring you that kind of new world of things and explain when you should be using Red Space, when you should be using, Rec 709. And that's, I think, causing a little bit of confusion. So a lot of those things we're going to be covering over at fxphd.com.
I'll just point to your green screen thing. I just did a green screen shot on Red a couple of weeks ago, and I'm yet to go into post with it, and I know we're going to have troubles because I'm just looking at the rushes of it thinking, whoa, I can only just see green there. It's so pale in the greens that
What did you shoot it at?
I don't know. I didn't shoot it, but I had a major, top flight film DP who's shot the weather a little bit since, but not any green screens.
Well, so if you have problems, at least let me have a look at the R3Ds on our scratch.
Yeah.
We had a problem with a transfer that we did ourselves on some stuff for FXPHD. It was a green screen shoot of the Kung Fu footage done out of China, and we found quantization and stuff. We didn't have our settings quite right we had a bug in a simulate. We checked it on flame. I saw it immediately. Went back and retransferred it. It's just keying 1,000 times better, and the image quality is dramatically better. And can't get over this enough. That transfer, it's just, it's so easy to say to the junior guy, can you just transfer all these files for me? And then I'll get serious about them. But it is not. I mean, we'd never do that on Telecine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about who does your film to tape. Just get them done, and then I'll start paying attention.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. We'll hopefully sort of get out of jail there. But it's been annoying, even just in the offline. Just trying to key it in the Avid has been quite annoying.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, no. I've got your number.
But yeah, there are a lot of things on the camera now. I mean, just the fact that you can view in RAW, you can view in Rec 709, you can view in Red Space in the LCD. And in the and I was talking to a DOP the other day, and he was like, I was doing it in RAW. And I said, why is that? And he pointed to the bottom of the LCD where it says, 2x1 RAW. And I said, no, that means it's recording RAW files. That doesn't change to Rec 709 if you're viewing it on Rec 709 on the split. And then he said, which I think was valid, that it should. I totally agree, it just doesn't. And so then I pointed out that how it was set up. He then pointed out, well, he wanted to view things in RAW because they didn't clip as early as they did in Rec 709. And I then said, yeah, except for actually it's not making any difference. It's the color space you're looking at. It's not changing the exposure or anything. So
it just looks like it's clipping earlier.
Yes.
Maybe.
And so he was like, good point. Well, that's fine though. And I said, yeah, but how are you doing your transfers? Because my point was, you can't put the thing to air in RAW. You have to go into a color space. So if you shoot it and it's not clipping in RAW, but will be clipping in Rec 709, then you get into the Telecine's grading session. I shouldn't say Telecine, I should say the, DI session. Now it's being clipped because somebody put it into Rec 709 to put it to air. And when they did that, it got clipped. Now they would be reasonable to put their hand on their heart and say, but that's how you shot it. To which the DOP would say, well, it wasn't clipping on my scope. Well, it wasn't because he was looking at the RAW. It isn't in the data file, but it is in the Telecine or the DI suite, because once you converted it to color space of video, it clips. And of course, what you'd need to do to get around that is adjust the transfer so that what you saw in the DI suite was not exactly word for word what the DOP saw on set, but the intent of what the DOP saw on set, which is, in other words, to bring down the level so it doesn't clip.
It is a major level of confusion. I've sat here listening to you talk about this subject on and off for over half a year, and it's still a level of confusion for me. I think anything you can do to enlighten people about it, I think it'll be fantastic. It still is.
Well, let me use an analogy, right? If you had a system of broadcast that was YUV, yeah, everything was being looked at in YUV, and you were working in RGB, that wouldn't be so clever because everyone's going to view it in YUV, so you shouldn't be working in RGB.
But if you can't, yourself. A film cameraman, it's just going to glaze over almost like I am now.
Well, but then you just hit it on the head when you just said them a film cameraman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they're a film cameraman, they won't know this, but no. This is not a film camera.
Yeah, but you've got film cameramen picking this thing up and being asked to use it every second day who are stepping into this. This is the major sort of thing, is that there's a lot of gotchas where the guys...
Well, I think I don't know if you're cleverly segueing into saying people should do our FX PhD course or not, but I mean, it's a professional camera. You need to learn how it works. And it is shooting RAW, and the implication of RAW is that it's not going to be RAW when it's viewed. I mean, people have to understand that. It is RAW. You don't print a raw photo out of your Canon, you print something that's been converted into Photoshop.
Yeah, see, John or Stu or whoever it was who made the comment is right, that there needs to be this, there needs to be the simple white paper on what you're meant to sort of set this, the simple cheat sheet on, there's no such thing really as a cheat sheet. It's too complicated for that, I think. But there needs to be...
Well, rules of thumb.
Yes, there needs to be ways, better ways of explaining it to, you know, your film guy who's walking onto set first time. You know, saying, oh, I've seen lots of great footage, fabulous. I know a few mates have shot with it. I've seen, you know, seen great results. How hard can it be? So, and that is the first thing. You step up and you go, oh, I've got all these choices here in this color space thing and this Rec 709. What's the difference?
That is
probably the biggest, I'd say, yes, that's probably the biggest
color space is a big
on-set
one.
Gotcha, I'd say.
Yeah, but I'd say another one is I was playing poker last night with some mates and they were shooting with the Red camera as second unit VFX guys. And they were like, the vary speed is hidden when you're at 4K. And I was like, what? Huh? And that's like, the vary speed doesn't work at 4K. Like, it's hidden. And I was like, what do you mean it's hidden? It's like, well, you can't go to 120 frames on 4K. The menu's hidden. And I said, well, it's not hidden. It's just can't do it. It's
just like, can't do it.
You have to go down to 2K. And I was like, well, it should have a button to tell you that. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And of course, yeah. From their world, it was like it should either have vary speed or not. And they had no concept of it being an interrelated concept, like a seesaw with 4K. You know, that's how I describe it. It's a seesaw, right? Like, you're down on 4K. You don't get vary speed. As you lift up on one end and go from 3 to 2, so too you can go to faster frame rates on the other. But they didn't even understand that seesaw concept.
Exactly. It's like digital SLR. You go to RAW, you know, your frame rates go slow. You want to go real fast, then go to JPEG, you know, medium quality.
There you go, because it's write speed to the CF card. Absolutely.
Exactly. It's
very good analogy.
So,
you ever thought of teaching a RED course?
No. I want the people that I work with and me to sort of get it in our heads easily and simply. So yeah, make it. I think there needs to be. There's the red course for post people maybe, and a red course for. I think there needs to be the film to red. Red for dummies for film people. Not the film people are dummies, but you know what I mean. There has to be the sort of something to get them from one headspace to another. There's a lot of you know, decades of knowledge that people don't necessarily have to undo, but they have to rethink.
Well, here's my thing. If you guys have a question that you'd like us to discuss because you think there's some point of confusion and that either you don't understand it or you think most other people around you don't understand it, just email us it in. We're more than happy to discuss it. We can even have a segment up at the end of each show where we just, you know, do a user question or
that's a good idea.
A listener question.
Absolutely.
If we don't know the answer, we'll happily speak to Graham or whoever at Red or that. All the guys are really, really helpful and are always very responsive to our emails, and see if we can find out the answer for you.
Yep, too right.
Not that we're the sole experts, but obviously we more than happy to do what we can to help.
Yep. If it chances are if you don't know it, I don't probably know it either, and Michael educate both of us.
Absolutely. Anyway, that.
So I interrupted your.
I was just going to say that course is on at FX PhD, and that's the sort of practical camera course thing, as opposed to. And actually, I should say, because I was leading into the segue onto gear, we don't have gear this week, though I was playing with this incredibly cool combined battery holder and down converter. So the back of your camera.
The Brolga thing?
Yes, Brolga. We had that yesterday.
Yes, right. That is cool. That's something that's proprietary, built by a camera rental company here in Sydney or in Australia called Limac. And as yet, it's not a externally available item, but it's very cool, very brilliantly well, very, very well engineered piece of kit.
It's sexy.
And I think if they wanted to sell it, that they could do lots. So, yeah, we might suss that out.
But next week we'll be doing more stuff on gear and also more stuff, as I say, on the SDK R3Ds. And you'll be doing tripods.
Yeah, look, again, this is a response to a couple of listener emails about choosing the right tripod for a red, really. And I think that there's a lot of people who have chosen the trick is making sure that it's going to suit all your needs. You might just sort of plonk the red on and go, oh, that's great, fantastic. But, you know, you're going to put reds and you're going to put rods and follow focuses and map boxes and then put lots of glass in front of those map boxes. And very quickly, the right tripod choice suddenly starts to feel not quite so right. So, yeah, there's definitely, I'm going to be speaking to O'Connor and to Satchler. I have put the word out to a couple of other manufacturers, and if they get back to me, I'll add them to the mix. But at the moment, I'll be speaking to those two guys, going straight to the source and telling them.
You should talk to Miller. They're good.
Well, okay. I had a look at the Miller stuff. I don't think the Miller, and they themselves really sort of have pushed their stuff more towards the doco, smaller stuff, HD, video.
I think they're 150 mil bowl, the whatever it is, the 60.
I'll go and suss it out. I should do, because Australian company. I should go and check it out. But my initial selection, my initial sort of searches for that, I didn't quite find anything that looked like it was quite up to the task. Maybe if you're just putting a prime lens on the front and it's a really small lightweight matte box and you're sort of hiking through the jungle.
That's exactly possibly. What we did. And it worked really well.
Okay. All right.
But anyway,
and Miller.
No, I mean, I'm fine. No, this is the discussion we want to have, right? If you don't think there's a good one in the Miller range.
Good point. No, I'm probably being, film set elitist, and there's plenty of other film kinds of film sets out there, I suppose. So, yes. All right. And Miller.
And we are not doing a red room because we effectively had one at the start of the show with the XL guys.
XL
so that's
films
it for this, for this week. We've got somebody commented, Jace, also, that they were stunned. We talk about the show notes, and they expected it to be four lines of text that didn't tell them much, and then they actually found a glossy PDF document with pictures and photos and stuff. They were just like, my God, this is the best show notes I've ever seen. So I should explain, when we say show notes, it is effectively a color glossy brochure PDF you can download to.
I think you might have to.
Well, I thought I'd
I'm going to lift the bar now.
Swing the pendulum the other way, but it is actually worth having a look.
But yes, there's pictures and definitely worth going to have a look at. All of the links to all the people and gear and equipment and sites and PDFs are all up there.
If you want to follow our somewhat geeky technical lives, I'm on Twitter.
Speak
as
for yourself.
Mike Seymour.
Go ahead. And I'm Wingrove.
Until next week, thanks so much for listening. And please send in those listener questions if you want us to address and discuss any technical aspects of
Red.
Yes,
to red@fxguide.com. Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2008 FX Guide, LLC.